This episode of Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by the Madrone Tap House in Old Town Eureka. Madrone has wood fire pizzas, salads, wraps, wings, and a rotating selection of local brews. Madrone is a family-owned business and sources local, organic, and non-GMO products whenever possible. What could be more Humboldt than that? Madrone has outdoor seating and offers delivery, so check them out Tuesdays through Saturdays, noon to 9 p.m. at 421 3rd Street in Old Town, or order by calling 273-5129 or online at madronetaphouse.com.
It's a very special 45th episode of Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost's adventure in podcasting. I'm Stephanie McGarry.
And I'm Andrew Goff. Yeah, it was a year ago. It was April of 2020 that we started doing this silly thing.
I cannot believe it. I can't believe it's been a year.
Oh yeah. But even more impressive than that, as much as I would love to sit here and just pat ourselves on the back for being able to Zoom for a year, because nobody else has been able to accomplish that.
Or do a podcast.
No, we are the first. More importantly, this last week marked 10 years of the Lost Coast Outpost being a thing.
Happy birthday, Loco!
Yeah, and so who better to come in and celebrate this occasion than the one and only Hank Sims, editor in, what is his title? Is he an editor-in-chief? Is that what we call him?
Yeah. I love that we don't even know that. I think that, I just call him like dude who sometimes rewrites my headlines.
Today on the show, we have Lost Coast Outpost main dude, Hank Sims.
Main dude, Hank Sims.
We'll talk to him about how this all got started, how he thinks it's going, how he thinks Steph and I are fucking up. And was this nerve-wracking for you?
Well, a little bit, yeah. I mean, technically, Hank is my boss. He could be like, this is terrible, you're fired.
Time will tell. So let's get him in here and see what happens.
Hi.
Yay. Great. Hi, Hank.
Hi, Steffi. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
I can see how this works in different areas of the office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steffi and I have different COVID chambers.
Good. Love it.
So is this weird?
No, it's good. It's good.
Yeah, no, this is not too self-referential to have an all loco podcast on the Lost Coast Outpost website.
I don't think so. Stephanie's mom is really eager for it, I hear.
Yeah. She asked me who we were going to be interviewing this week. And I was like, well, you've possibly heard of him, Hank Sims. And she went, oh, wow, that'll be really great. You know, I've been following him ever since the journal. And I'd really like to get to know more about him as a person.
Okay.
I went back and looked, and you are the 45th Humboldt Holding Up guest. Number 45.
I didn't even realize that.
Oh, yeah, like Obama.
No. The other guy. We should just go into like the reason that we've decided to have you on this week. This week marked 10 years of the Lost Coast Outpost being a fun little nuisance here in Humboldt. How about that? 10 years of Loco. You can applaud that.
Wow.
That's good.
So I guess, the first thing I want to force you to wrestle with out loud for everyone's enjoyment is why does Loco work? And specifically here in Humboldt, I know this is something we ponder internally sometimes. Obviously, there's a lot of online news in the world at large these days. But we've had indicators that suggest that maybe Humboldt has embraced online-only outlets significantly more than in other areas. What's up with that?
It seems like, I mean, I think part of that may be due to Humboldt. Part of that's maybe due to Loco, and part of that's due to Humboldt. But like Humboldt is a place, like I always said, like, you know, like Humboldt is it's essentially an island, and it's always really, really interested in itself, and it can never have too much talk, news, stuff about itself, people will always want to read more about Humboldt, because people are really inward looking here. Like we've got a real island mentality.
You think that's different than other places?
Yeah, I think that there's a more of a sense of place here than there is in other places. Definitely.
Yeah. So it's just like anything, because if we put in anything that has anything to do with Humboldt, people will love it. That's why it kind of works.
People will. I don't know if they'll love it, but they'll be interested in it.
But it will provoke them. Yeah.
Wrong word. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, apart from cities, I suppose, you know, but any place of Humboldt size in America that is not as interested in itself is looking elsewhere. As you know, it looks outside itself to for its culture and its sort of center, you know, its center of the universe. Like our center of the universe is right here.
Well, I always say, like, you know, Santa Rosa, obviously a much huger city than Eureka, but it kind of lives in the shadow of San Francisco.
Yeah, it's a satellite.
And we don't have anything that we're looking to in a similar way. So we can obsess over every minute detail of what's happening in our corner of the universe.
Yeah. I mean, do as many people know who their like county supervisor is in Santa Rosa as in Humboldt County? I very much doubt it.
I don't know, because I don't, you know, this is where I live and I don't live anyplace else, but I also feel like Humboldt has a lot of news, like that it also, I mean, it's definitely not a boring place to be a reporter, like to report on the news. Like I feel like we have a lot of interesting things happening here, but I don't know if that really is true, or if it's just kind of like you said, because we're just so interested in ourselves that it seems that way. Like, what do you think about that?
Like, why is Humboldt not boring?
Because I think makes itself. Like Humboldt is always in this sort of process of making itself and what it is, and this is not true of other places. I don't know, Steph. Like I've been a reporter in other places, and there's always stuff going. You know, there's always like newsworthy stuff. There's always like monumental decisions being taken by governmental entities that will affect daily life. But I really think that like there is a lot of news in Humboldt. It's true, but. Part of what makes it news, what is an interested population.
But I think I've heard you talk in the past about how Humboldt is kind of a unique microcosm of America. Like we in the context of this county of 4,000 square miles, 130,000 people, we have, you know, a lot of the different stereotypes of America. You know, we have a conservative enclave, we have, you know, a liberal, more liberal place, and you know, that culture war kind of collides here in the middle in Eureka.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. Another thing that I've said before is like the through line in all of like Humboldt County history since settlement is that it is the place for outlaws. It is the place, you know, where people went to like take over, you know, like at first they went over to, you know, sort of take over the land to start felling trees, to like mine, you know, blast away hillsides for gold, and you know, is where they could escape from that. So much so that the U.S. government had to put in a fort, a military installation to sort of keep the settlers like somewhat calm. But then, you know, and then on through to like hippies, and you know, it's people who wanted to escape from everything else. And is it a micro? Yeah. I mean, It's kind of a microcosm. What I said before, I think, like maybe we're thinking of is that Humboldt, as somebody who grew up in Mendocino County in Willits, has some of the same ingredients, you know, it's got the counterculture, you know, from my era, you know, it's like was the age of the counterculture sort of like moving out into the hills. Like in Mendocino County, it was always that the hippies and the old school, you know, the loggers and the people who were there before the hippies came, they had to make their peace because their kids all went to school together. There wasn't the sort of geographic segregation that there is in Humboldt. You had hippies and loggers in Willits. You had them in Ukiah. You had them in Fort Bragg. You had them in every town. They were all in every town, and their kids all went to school together. Whereas Humboldt is like it contrasts to that because it was much more like segregated culturally. Like Eureka and Arcata and Fortuna and McKinleyville were always very different sorts of things, and still are to some extent.
Yeah, totally.
So you mentioned growing up in Willits, and I you know, something that you've heard us do on the show is we make people talk about themselves and their stories. So, you know, everyone arrives in Humboldt in a unique and wonderful way. Some of us are blessed to be born here. You were not as blessed. But give us the kind of Hank Humboldt arc. Why were you drawn here?
Well, at first, because I mean, it was a place to go to college. You know, I've moved to and from Humboldt. I've been here like solid, my family and I, for like the last 20 some years now. But I've moved here and away many times. At first, just to go to college. You know, it was the closest place to go to college, and cheap. And so I ended up here for that. But then I would move away. I'd move back down to Willits. I moved to the East Coast for a while. And I went like traveling around like Central America a lot. But then I went to school. I came back here for a graduate degree once. And then after that, I went to UC Berkeley for journalism school. And then after that, my wife and I thought, well, we want to like raise kids and buy a house and stuff like that. And we're not going to do that in San Francisco. So we thought, yeah, we'll come to Humboldt.
But you come to Humboldt, but why betray Mendocino?
Mendocino, there isn't as much. There just isn't as much.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
There's not the university. There's not all the stuff that the university sort of provides. It's just a little bit bigger. I think it's more of its own thing. I mean, than Mendocino.
So you came up here to go to school, but then what happened? Like, what, take us through, you know, you, so you got a job at the Journal. Yeah.
That was after I graduated from Berkeley. I got a job at the Journal. I'd written some stuff that the Journal republished. I went to the Judy Berry trial. Do you know about that, Steph?
I don't think so.
You know who Judy Berry is?
A long time ago.
Do you know who Judy
Berry
is?
Redwood Summer controversy.
Yeah, she was at Earth first. You were very tiny then, Steph.
Okay, yeah. was I even born yet? I don't know.
Well, so Redwood Summer was 1990, right?
Yes, okay, so I was 3 years old.
You're three, yeah. So, well, it was like, so Redwood Summer was like a series of, at the time, like these big out-of-town, and you know, still to some degree, industry. Yeah, these big companies owned like all the forest land in Humboldt, and like right, this is like in the, you know, Michael Milken junk bond sort of financialization of everything days. So there was like they're like really like overcutting the forest to like an astonishing degree, and so Earth First, Judy Berry was a leader of a movement that organized to stop this, and they organized this series of demonstrations called Redwood Summer. To sort of fight back against us. It was a big deal, and it was a very intense time up here.
It's like during the Palco takeover and that kind of time.
Well, yeah, it was like after the Palco takeover.
Yeah.
Yeah. But right before the demonstrations were set to kick off, like a bomb went off in Judy Berry's car.
Oh yes, okay, yeah, I know
this
story.
So the bomb went off, and then like Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney were arrested. The Oakland Police Department arrested them because they believed that they were carrying their own bomb. Anyway, fast forward years later, like there was this large like sort of civil suit against the FBI and the city of Oakland for like arresting them falsely, and they won that. And I covered that because I was living in the Bay Area at the time. I went and I sat in on every day of that trial and covered it. And wrote about it for lots of places, and the Journal ended up publishing some. That was my first story in the Journal.
Wow, that's good stuff.
So you had written, so that is while you were at Berkeley in J school.
No, that was right after I just graduated. We spent a year there after I graduated.
And then how did you kind of ramp? So you know, eventually you became editor at the Journal. How did that kind of ramp up?
Well, I think like people just left. Like when I first got there, a guy Keith Easthouse, who I think is still around. I never get to see, and I wish I could. He's kind of offline. Was the editor, and then me and Emily Gernon, who since moved back to Minnesota, and was at the Star Tribune for a long time, I think, or the Pioneer Press, St. Paul Pioneer Press. And they, you know, it was kind of just interns. Like Keith left. Emily left, and so I was the one left, and so I was.
So you just began. You're the only person.
No, there's an application process. And
okay.
All that.
Yeah. They were like, "Well, you're the only person here, so okay." Nice.
And then after that, so then Heidi Walters came, and Ryan Burns came, and Andrew Goff came. And that was,
I know some of these names. Yeah. Andrew Goff, Ryan Burns.
Yeah.
These guys great. Have you great guys people. Have all been around each other for a long time. And I feel sometimes I feel sad that I don't have this same history, but
yeah,
don't be sad.
We talk in code sometimes in the chat, right?
Yeah, occasionally I'm like, I don't have no fucking idea what you guys are talking about. I just sort of like sometimes I push it and I'm like, let me be a part of this, and other times I'm just like, whatever, I just stop paying attention.
That's probably the correct one.
Yeah, I started doing stuff for the journal in 2009.
Is that wow. Really, was it that late? Yeah. No.
No, that was it. The first 7-0 Heaven was April of 2009.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh okay. God, it seems like longer.
I love that's how you, I love that that's how you discovered Andrew Goff.
Yeah.
No Heaven.
Yeah. Because one of his friends sent us this and said, you should run this. And I was like, yeah. And it was the first time, like one of the first people send stuff all the time, as you know, Steffi. But this was like the first time I was like, yes, we should run that.
Then we should. I of course, you know, want to talk about how that, you know, led to you eventually starting Loco, which of course was 10 years ago now. And when you officially started, it was just you, right? Like, I don't even really know totally the whole story. So
yeah, it was just me. So I went down there to Ferndale. I was working in Ferndale at the Ferndale offices at the time. And it was, it was just me, but it was also the radio people and all the sales people, which are really important. But the idea was, you know, we had this idea that, you know, that especially in those days, that like the time standard was in a really bad way. And, you know, the company that owns the time standard is still kind of in a strange space. The idea is that, you know, we could, if we started from the ground and retooled from the ground up, we could maybe we could rebuild, you know, for the future, you know, the things that a newspaper used to do just on the web, because we wouldn't have like the weight of the newspaper behind us, you know. And that was the thing that hits the newspaper industry really hard, and why they can't like pivot quite as quickly as some other, you know, outlets can, or new outlets can, because they have the entire like real estate and infrastructure and payroll of the old thing, and they can't quite do that where they get all their revenue still from, you know, or a lot of their revenue from the paper, and like pivot and quickly like move to the new thing, especially since they're not investing, most of them aren't investing any money in that.
And I think something we should mention is that while you're the editor and a reporter for Loco, you also coded the whole site, you know, like you're a programmer. And so that was part of why you were able to kind of one man show this from the start.
Yeah, we were able to, you know, all the things that people know about, you know, all the little sort of features that the people know about the outpost, like, you know, we've gotten to a space now where, like, if people feel an earthquake, as you know, Andrew, like, we can, you know, like, that even if we don't feel the earthquake, we can see that an earthquake happened, because all of a sudden, like, the traffic to the site will just start blooming, you know, going a little bit crazy. And that's because like people know by now that like it's going to be on the outpost. Like if there's a big earthquake, was that an earthquake? You know, like how big was that earthquake?
Yeah, people Loco will tell me.
Loco will tell you like right away. And that's because like you say, like I was able, because I can write computer stuff, you know, we made all those things that like sort of just feed the site automatically. And, you know, as an instance of like, you know, when I was saying like to rebuild what the newspaper did from the ground up, it's like that, you know, there's so much that, you know, public information out there that, you know, that is useful or not to people, but that we can just bring in automatically, that we can just put into the system and have a record of forever. There's still, and you know, one of the things that the internet can do is that. And so we started doing that.
Yeah. And I mean, and even back when you were editor at the journal, like you had built the journal's whole site at that time.
Yeah.
And at that time, had you considered, could we just lose the paper and have the journal be online only?
I never did with the journal, and I still don't think that's a good idea for the journal, because, like, you know, it's in an ideal world, the journal is something, you know, a magazine is something that you sit down and read. And so it's something that's not really so much meant for the, like, the delivery of information, but something that you know, read for pleasure.
Yeah. So we've settled on this, like, March 30 as being Loco's official birthday, though, even though I guess, you know, you were probably kind of starting it before that. Like, I guess I just want to hear the story of
why we settled on that date.
Of getting the Outpost ready to launch. And then if you can explain, like, what exactly made it official, like what got it just hitting the ground.
Yeah. So the thing that happened was there were some there was like this 101 slid out, like in Southern Humboldt. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the actual, like, Outpost had been around, you know, the software had been around for like a week or two before, I can't remember. And they've been doing little things on it and just trying to get track, you know, and just starting it that way. But when the slides happened, like the all of a sudden, like, Humboldt was cut off for like a week, right? Or several days anyway.
Right. I remember when that used to be the way that would happen, like the slides. Yeah.
Oh, it could happen again.
Well, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, that's right. That's before they built the bypass there.
Yeah.
So we were reporting on this. And one of the things that I thought to do was, like, okay, if it's, you know, if there's there are ways you can get around this slide. It's going to take, you know, you should know what you're doing, and you're going into the backwoods, and it's going to take some doing. And it's, you know, like, these roads might slide out too. But, like, one of the things if you have to get to the city, you know, if you have to get around this slide, I can't remember if 299 was screwed up too. There have been times.
Maybe there were definitely times when there'd be both.
Yeah, there have been times. I can't remember too. But anyway, like, you know, I got out, like, Google Maps, and I, you know, drew, like, okay, if you absolutely have to, you can go Petrolia this way and around, or, you know, up Bell Springs Road, and then blah, 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 you know, like, and what happened there was, like, and so, like, traffic, like, was huge on that day. And part of the reason was because somebody we know sent that to the San Francisco Chronicle. And so the San Francisco Chronicle linked us for the first time. And so we got tons of traffic. So that's, like, the first time.
When I went back and looked at that post, and it was kind of interesting, because it was kind of foretold a lot of the things that Loco was going to start doing that no one had really done yet. Like, in that post, that very first post about the landslide, as you say, you had, you know, you drew the map, like, here's how you can get around it. But then there was also, you know, you were working in Ferndale at time with the radio stations right there. And so the DJs of the radio station were calling people, and you were taking the little audio clips from those radio interviews and putting them in the post. And I think that, you know, we hadn't really, you know, 10 years ago, I mean, that makes total sense to do now, but, like, 10 years ago, that was kind of like, oh, this is a smart way to cover this that no one had really attempted yet.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you're right. 10 years ago, like, was a different, like, sort of era of the internet, and it's hard to remember, but, like, yeah, it was a matter of, like, oh, the medium can do this. Like, let's do it.
Now everyone does it. Now, you know.
Yeah, it was early. Yeah, it was early for that. And I think it's because, you know, like, there are other internet-only sites in Humboldt, but people doing news at that time were, like, television reporters, were newspaper reporters, and they're still, you know, they have to think in terms of television or the news or radio or something. Yeah. The web can, like, do all of those things.
Yeah, I think we talk about how it would be much more difficult to launch Loco now when a lot more people have figured out the web. But, you know, at the time, you know, the Time Standards web presence was meager, and the, you know, there was only one television news station at the time, and they hadn't really figured out the web, and so it was kind of easy for Loco to be scrappy and jump in there and garner an audience by doing things in a web forward thinking way that people could just quickly access
Yep, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so that kind of like the next thing I was going to touch on is you basically kind of answered it there, but it's like this of why you decided to start this different kind of for site for Humboldt. Like, is this, did you feel like the online, that type of news was just something that was missing here? Like, was that the need that you felt like wasn't being met for as far as news in Humboldt?
Well, I mean, I think we sort of like figured it out as we went along, like what it was that was missing, you know, and we sort of, you know, we made the tools and like we started using the tools and we figured out what was missing and what was needed and what was not, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I do, you know, I did think at the time that like, that it would be sort of the future. And, you know, this is also before everyone had an iPhone in their pocket. You know, this was before it became quite as ubiquitous as it is today. You could see that like information delivery was going in that direction, that it was going like digital, but it was so, and it did strike me that, you know, this would be a good time to do that. You know, this would be a good time. This is a moment in which, because of like the sort of skills I had, like Andrew was talking about, of being able to like write software and stuff, like we could, if we hit it now, we could really do it good and do something interesting. And
and did it when that happened and you got that first, you know, link, I mean, that whole story with the slides, did you just really see Loco just start to take off after that? Or was it really?
I was happy. Like, it was because it was like, holy moly, we got 10,000 page views today. And that was like,
right.
And that was like, yeah, that was like a huge, it was like, maybe we can make this work. You know, I don't think we'd had any advertisers yet, or maybe, right. Maybe one. I think Pearson's was the first advertiser. But yeah, I mean, it was a good sign anyway.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel kind of like when something like that happens too? Are you kind of like, fuck, like what do I do now? Like if you didn't have any, like now I need to keep producing this popular content, and it's like the next day there's no nothing going on. What do you do?
It never ends.
Yeah.
Well, I think you've mentioned before that, you know, as you say, that first day was a big day, and that for months and months afterwards, Loco did not top that first day.
which made
you just feel like, oh god, like are we ever gonna you know, top this one thing where we got lucky and we're well positioned.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Still feels like that sometimes. Like on a slow news day is like, we're done.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, yeah. I wanna know, over these 10 years, this decade of Loco, you know, what has stuck out to you as being really significant? Like what are some of What are you most proud of?
Like, I mean, they're just, you know, I can think of like certain, like sort of what seemed like milestones at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, certain huge stories that, you know, big scoops that we got. I mean, one milestone was like the Father Fried incident, you know, when Father Fried was murdered in Eureka. Like that was a big sort of solemn, somber day. And you know, we did really well that day. We covered it really, really well. It was on January 1st of 2014. That was you know, a couple of years after that. But that I don't know, I just remember that being a really sort of, I don't even know how to describe it, like really solemn and just a day that we did really well for the community, I thought.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to that, you know, because I had come on at that point, and you know, you had the horrible event happen on New Year's Day, and I think it was, I want to say that it fell on like a Saturday,
yeah,
and that like not a lot of people were, you know, at their posts, and I think we, you know, we jumped to it, and then there was, because there was the event, but then, you know, there was like a subsequent kind of manhunt looking for the suspect, and you know, and when we were able to, you know, follow that really closely and get that information up, like, you know, he was arrested on the highway, I want to maybe a day later. And and I think that Humboldt had never seen an event of that gravity covered in the way that we did that. And I kind of think of that as being a catalyst for, you know, the year that we grew the most, that we grew the audience the most, where people were like, oh shit, this thing, I should probably follow Loco because I get information.
I think that's right. Cause it was an occasion, you know, but we'd experimented, you know, we were like trying out different things, like of voice and tone and what we cover and what we don't cover. And that sort of like that, yeah, that event was like a, you're right. It sort of, I think it won us a lot of respect and following.
Yeah. And that's something you just mentioned was something I wanted to talk about, because I think that something that always seems to shock people, say from out of the area who encounter Loco for the first time, is that there is a tone to it, you know, more snarky maybe in the early days, maybe a little less so now just because of the way the internet is trending, but people seem to appreciate, or you know, did, that we had a more human voice, even if they said they didn't. And I think that you're an advocate of being less formal in newspeak than has been traditional. Why be untraditional in this way? What is it? Why is that good? Why has that been good for Loco?
Yeah, no, I definitely think it has been. I mean, because like, I think, I don't know, I've always been like, my world was always like sort of alternative media, you know, when I grew up. And I was thinking the other day about Herb Cain. Do either of you know who Herb Cain is?
Was he a Chronicle?
Yeah, he was a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle.
Yeah.
And like when I was in high school, I loved Herb Cain so much, and still love Herb Cain, even though he died. When I was in high school, like I would, for lunch hour, I would like walk to the corner store and buy a copy of the Chronicle so I could read Herb Cain. And he just painted a picture of a city, you know. He's beautiful, and he was much beloved. He was very funny, just sort of like weird odds and ends and jokes. And it's just sort of like it sort of made San Francisco into a world. You know, I'd been there to San Francisco before growing up in Willits, but I didn't like quite understand. You know, I didn't feel it as a world until I started reading Herb Cain. And then, you know, I grew up, you know, reading, you know, like the Alt Weeklies or the AVA or like the Mendocino County Alternative Press, which was huge in the scene for like the Mendocino County Alternative Press when I was growing up was just crazy and unequaled. And, you know, I just like voice. I just like allowing sad things to be sad and allowing funny things to be funny and not flattening it all out.
But how do you justify sassy headlines that Loco deals in when so many other media outlets have not been able to figure out how to justify that, you know? Because I think that's been a big advantage of Loco, and I think especially in the early days, like it was kind of jarring to people, like, oh, this doesn't sound like news that I've experienced it traditionally.
Yeah, we still get all the time, like people like clipping the headlines is like, this literally is not the Onion, or like, you know, this could be, you know, like this is real.
Well, it makes some people mad.
It makes some people mad.
Shockingly, still in this day, you know, people are like, that's not how you do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know where these people are coming from. There's certain people get mad at people who are having fun.
I think that there's just some people that maybe still have this attitude that like news needs to be straight, and you know that they and I guess they don't take into consideration that there's like a lot. There's a lot of other, there's always been stuff with voice, you know, in news too. Yeah. And I think maybe that's part of it too, the fact that Loco does all of these different things. but maybe doesn't always like put it, you know, categorize it in the same way that maybe people are used to seeing. And I think that some people just feel like, you know, when you're talking about anything that's just, you know, factual, it should just like be the facts, just needs to be that like, you know, nut graph style of reporting, and they just want to see it be like straight. They feel like the Voice maybe puts too much of an editorial, you know, lean on it, and they don't feel comfortable with that. They're like, you're making this, you know, about you and your view on this. And
sure. And I, you know, to some extent I sympathize with that. And but the stories that are, you know, like, you know, if one of Ryan's stories, you know, we're not gonna put like a goofy, doofy head on like some big like Ryan Burns investigation, you know. But when somebody runs into a fire hydrant, you know, when somebody runs into a fire hydrant and you know it's exploding all over the town, then it calls for a wee. Yeah. There's a time and place for everything.
Yeah, totally. I think that it's just like we do that. We do the straight reporting too, but it's just not maybe what. It's just when that happens, it doesn't catch people's attention in the same way, so they just don't. That's not what gets them all riled up, and so then they form this idea that Loco only does the other stuff, and that's obviously like something that's always been kind of a struggle with us, is this like some people see it this certain way.
But it's not a struggle though, because those people who see it a certain way, you know, the people who get on their high horse about this stuff, they see, but here's the secret, Steffi, I'll tell you, I'll lean in real close and tell you, they secretly love it too. They love to get mad about it is the thing that they love.
That's totally true.
It gives them an opportunity to hop on that high horse and ride it to heaven.
That's their own wee.
It's totally true. That's right.
What are your favorite unserious things that Loco has done over the years?
Oh God, I have such a bad memory. Like, yeah, I mean, fire hydrants are always nice.
Okay, fire hydrants is like.
You make it sound like this happens like so much. Because everybody runs into a fire hydrant. I guess
it's always a happy occasion. Yeah.
As long as nobody's hurt. Yeah.
Storm Zillow is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Armageddon.
That's another thing that people get mad about. Like every time we've done Rainageddon or Stormocalypse, or it's like, yeah, why not?
Yeah. I don't know. What are some of the other? I have a bad time remembering them. What are some of the best ones?
For some reason, I just want to talk about weed or no weed, just because.
I remember the best one. No. One was like we followed this news van to see where it was going.
Oh yeah.
that was probably my favorite.
Yeah. One day it was a very slow news day on Loco, and I was out. I think probably at a fire hydrant explosion, and we're like, "Oh, where's the Channel 3 news van going? There's nothing else going on. Maybe I'll just drive around." And it turned out that they were taking the news van to the car wash to get washed. So we covered that.
It was like, yeah. This is definitely proof that today is the slowest news day.
I love that. I remember one day when we were still in Ferndale, and like a truck took a corner too fast, and one single can of paint fell off the back of it, and like, you know, it kind of spilled out on the road, and it was like the main road into Ferndale, and so like they were redirecting traffic, and we just did blowout coverage of that paint can in the road because that was fun.
Yeah. We like to have fun. I remember, I mean, now I'm just gonna like to talk about me and my favorite contributions to Loco. Yes. I just remember when I first, you know, started like doing that, you know, cat food thing, which is basically I peaked really early because that's still like probably the best thing that I've done. That was just pure luck. It's like that amazing story had happened. But when I was, you know, writing it, it wasn't my very first article that I wrote, it was close to,
and put Steffi on the map.
Yeah. And I definitely, you know, So I had to be snarky and humorous with that, and like even put, you know, a pun in the headline. And I just remember thinking like, is this gonna, you know, I feel like if it were someplace else, I might not have been able to get away with doing that. But you guys are like, yeah, you can do that here. You can put stupid puns in your headline.
We forced you to unlearn all of the important things that you paid big money to a university to teach you.
Right. Yeah, pretty much. That was a fun time. That was one of my my proudest times at Loco. people still remember.
You wanted to talk about weed or no weed?
I don't know. I just thought that was a very unique thing that Loco did that I know that no one else has ever done. And
tell me about weed or no weed. I know a little bit about this, but it's
Weed or no weed predates Stephanie, so.
Okay, so weed or no weed was the state had passed, it had sort of legalized commercial marijuana operations, right? They sort of said like, okay, at the time under Prop 215, like there was you still couldn't grow for commercial use, even though people were, and it was a big mess. And so the state finally said like, okay, we're going to allow commercial marijuana operations. And so you counties, like local jurisdictions, which in California have, you know, sort of broad powers over land use issues, like you're going to have to make your own regulatory system. So the county was setting out then to like sort of get together its, commercial cannabis ordinance. And it was struck me that they're doing it on like, you know, almost no data. Like they didn't know, because it's been a black market industry, or it was a black market industry for so long. The county didn't know like the state of the industry. How are they going to regulate the land use decisions that they're going to make around the industry without having some sort of solid data on how is actually affecting land, you know, how what the industry is, you know? So the thing I did, and which later a UC Berkeley team did in a different way, but I sort of like, okay, we'll sort of crowdsource this. What we can do is like, we'll make a little game out of it. And we have like, we'll give you a parcel, you know, viewed from satellite, you know, sort of anonymized. You can't tell which parcel it is or where it is. But then all the public can go in, click a button. Is this weed or no weed? You know,
yeah, so it's like,
is there weed here or is there no weed?
So you cut out, and this kind of speaks to your strengths a little bit, you know, like, so you coded this thing up, it grabbed, cut out satellite views of parcels. And then, you know, we made a game of it and asked people, okay, does this look like a property that has weed on it? So you're looking for a greenhouse, or just so that we could, so that Loco could give the world at large a better understanding, like how much of Humboldt is participating in this market.
Yeah. And like, you know, in which watershed. So like, I mean, we crunched the data in a lot of ways, and I had to like go back and refresh some of my college statistics, to exactly how to do this. And the methodology is still there if you want to look at it. But like, we figured out, like, so we broke it down like, okay, because we have this parcel data, and because we know how these parcels are zoned, and because we know like in which watershed they're located, we can then get some sort of like rough idea about like, you know, where and like, you know, in which of the, you know, the broad watersheds. I think that is divided up into like counties divided up in like 10, like, you know, broad watersheds. In which of those, you know, in which, you know, where are the most weed grows happening, and like where, on what sort of zoning, you know, everyone assumed it would be on THP or timber harvest zoning where the most weed was happening, but no, actually it was in this other U zone. And there's this like sort of all sort of interesting stuff about that, like, you know, what areas of the county, which watersheds, like what land use zoning, you know, on the books is where weed is being grown.
So I can only imagine that this made some people mad.
Some people made some people mad. Yeah, because it was in this era of like of like transform, you know, the industry was like coming out of the closet. It was like, we sort of agree, or I mean, some people don't agree, but like that it's bad for marijuana to be, you know, criminalized. It's bad. Prohibition was bad. Mm-hmm. That was a bad thing. We're going that way. And so like, what happens when you undo prohibition is like, oh, you become a business like any other business. But you know, it's hard for people to, this is where we're going, but it's hard for people to make that switch in their head.
It was an era of uncertainty in which people were freaked out, which is not dissimilar to where it is now, but
yeah.
So, and did you have any more to boast about weed or no weed? Or?
No.
No. Okay. So this last year has been a bit of a downer. Loco has not convened in the flesh for about a year now because of COVID. But you know, one of the side effects of the conditions of the last year is that Loco had a big year. You know, what do you think that the pandemic showed us about the Loco model? Like how did we do from where you sit?
I mean, we did. I mean, as you know, as a news organization and as a business, yeah, we did really well, right? I mean, if it's just that, it was like, how, you know, what did we do? How did we do? And you know, COVID kind of swallowed up most other things for a while there, and so like now, we're gonna have to try to, you know, we're gonna figure out, you know, what, you know, we're gonna roll with like what comes after COVID, you know, like. People are, as a topic, like people are near to being done with it, you know, and hopefully like the idea is that like, as you know, that we'll soon be out of the pandemic, hopefully. And so then we'll I don't know if we're going to get back to normal, but we're going to have to figure out what we're getting back to.
The future is uncertain.
But it's bright.
Do you think that I haven't been as around as long as you guys, but I feel a little bit like, do you feel that like in this last year, Loco has kind of grown up a little bit, like that there's been something that's really changed?
I don't know, grown up.
Well, maybe that's a bad way to say it. There seems to be something that's changed to me, maybe in our tone, or and maybe it's just because of the time, you know, or just in what content we prioritize.
I think there's been a change in that for sure. And, I mean, in the last year, and part of that is logistical because we're not sitting down there in Old Town all the time every day. So, you know, if the car crash happens on 4th Street, we're not necessarily going to go, see what's going on with that. But you know, there's been other more important things going on. That hopefully we've devoted our energy to. And the thing is that, yeah, we've devoted so much energy to those more important things now for the last year. And those things aren't going to be as important anymore. So it's a matter of like,
It's weird. Like I think I kind of divide, you know, my time at Loco oddly into like two different tone eras, and they kind of coincide with like the tone of the country. Like, you know, when Loco first started, you know, we talk about the snark, and just it was more, the internet was more of the Wild West, and it was freewheeling and fun and irreverent. And then roughly 5 years ago, things took a turn for the dark, and people went a little crazy, and I think that we had to, you know, we had to react to that a little bit, you know, and the way that shook out was just in like, okay, just because something worked previously doesn't mean that we're going to always be able to be successful doing that. So, you know, you look at something like, you know, our decision, like, okay, Thunderdome is going away. And, you know, at one point we were really proud of that innovation, and then it came to a point when we were proud to take it away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There was a sort of the internet itself became, you know, where it was once just like a never ending wonderland of joy, where it became something else. Like,
yeah, the exact opposite is what it became.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, so but you know, now the, you know, now those times are gone too. I don't know. We're gonna see.
Yeah, no, I think it feels like almost like a clean slate again. And now, what is the tone of now coming out of this pandemic, coming out of Trump? You know, it's a whole new world that we get to invent.
Yeah, yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah.
What do you see for the future of Loco and just of for Hank Sims? Are you going to keep concentrating all your energy in Loco, or do you have a new, is it time for you to come up with the new next thing?
No, I don't know. No, I'm not, I don't have anything else going on.
Okay, good. Great.
Well, it was like, are you abandoning us? No. Question.
No, but I think generally like things, I think I do like go with the people who will be, who say that, like, you know, this is, we're due for a roaring 20s. Like, I think that we're going to get that. I think the world in general is going to come out of the pandemic like a little bit happier.
You're saying it's time to party.
It's time to party. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I'm too old to party, but everyone else can go party.
What? Why? You're too old to party. So,
not like it's 1999 anymore.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what else. Well, that's all we had kind of written down to talk about. What else you want to talk about?
I don't know. I don't have anything else.
No, Herb, you want to talk about?
If I bring Herb Cain back, if I send one person to go read Herb Cain, then
okay,
yeah.
Okay, well that's easy.
Yeah.
I don't know. What about like the current media landscape in Humboldt County?
It's, I don't know. It's on some kind of hold. Like, you'd think that there would have been more drastic like changes during the pandemic, but not really. Everything's pretty much the same as it was.
What do you mean? What do you think you should have seen that you didn't?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like something like, you know, Digital First Media, Alden Capital, the owners of the Time Standard, you know, the hedge fund that owns our poor brethren at the Time Standard, you know, them like just like saying, you know, tossing it all in for scraps, but no, they've held on so far. Yeah, I don't know. The media landscape is pretty much the same. Nobody's gone out of business, has they? Titus is still doing the Ferndale Enterprise.
Yes.
Jack and Kevin are still doing the Mad River Union.
Yeah.
There's still new, two television news stations.
New owner at the Journal.
New owner at the Journal. Yeah. That's will that change anything? I don't know if that'll change much. Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Sure. Yeah. Nothing.
We made it.
Okay.
We all made it.
We made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do this summer that is unloco related to kick off the roaring 20s?
We're gonna go out to Sandy Bar for a week at some point. We're gonna go.
You love this place.
I love going out to Orleans. I wrote a column about Orleans one time. Just how great Orleans is. Orleans is like, if people have never made it up to Orleans, they should go. Mm. Like, Orleans is a weird scene. And it's really, really lively. It reminds me of the Humboldt / Mendo / Emerald Triangle backwoods in like the 70s, where like there's a lot of places, a lot of those kind of like rural communities and road associations and backwoods places in the 70s, they all like curdled at some point. Most of them, you know, they all got kind of like dark and ugly when cocaine and meth hit. But Orleans is like, it's such a positive, like bustling place. It's lovely.
So that's the place to start out the roaring 20s.
Yeah, there we go. That's right.
I think I've been to Orleans. I'm like, where is that out by?
Yeah. Do you know? Are you really asking? You're not really asking.
No, I am really asking.
Oh, it's like, it's
Debbie, you've never been to Orleans?
I think that I have, but I'm not. I'm just not thinking of exactly where it is right now.
It's like you turn like up
in relation
96,
to where we are.
Turn up 96, okay. Drive past Hoopa, drive past Wetchpeck, go like all the way to the county border, like right there on the border in the northeastern part of the county.
The border with Siskiyou. Yeah.
Yeah, the
Siskiyou border. Yeah.
The forgotten humbled neighbor, Siskiyou.
Yes, yeah, totally.
It's sweet up there. Like they have it's the Klamath, so it's this whole different like sort of bioregion. And it's hot as hell, and there's tons of like farmers, and you got the Karuk tribe, and there's beautiful swimming in the river. It's a wonderful place.
You just besmirched Siskiyou County, and I was wondering if you could rank all of the counties that Humboldt touches.
Huh. Okay. Well, I guess Mendo number one, because I got
to Mendo. Okay. Really? Just straight up.
No question.
True.
Okay.
To his roots.
Let's see. Yeah. Then I'll take. I mean, I haven't really spent enough time in Trinity to know. I don't really know that much about Trinity, I guess. So it goes down the list. So I'll go Delmort 2, Trinity 3, Siskiyou, which I'm sure is lovely in lots of ways, is 4.
Distant 4th.
Distant 4th,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Get it.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we did an hour. That's probably as much as people can stand, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Probably should get back to Loco.
Yeah, Ryan's doing everything right now.
Yeah. Should we bring Ryan in?
Oh, Ryan.
I don't know.
Come say hi, Ryan.
He said he was gonna crash. He didn't.
I know. I thought he really was going to. I felt kind of bad, actually, in a way, for not inviting him. Although I suppose we should also invite John Ferrara. And
there you go. For the 11th and 12th anniversary shows.
Yeah. I'll try, and if it doesn't work, we'll cut this out.
That's what they always say.
let's see if he responds. No, he's busy.
Oh, all right, doing actual work.
Yeah,
that guy.
All right, well, thanks, Hank.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Hank.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else to add? No, I already asked that. Okay.
For the podcast, please.
No, you gotta send us a photo.
Oh.
We'll use that mugshot photo, the fake mugshot that we made.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. That's good.
That's
okay. All right.
Later.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey.
All right, there we have it, our most self-referencing podcast to date. I've tried real hard to have this not be a thing. You know, we don't do a lot of banter off the top. We kind of just get into it and, like, you know, let the person who was our guest be the star. We don't mm-hmm. force a lot of banter, but that was a lot of talk about us. I don't know. Is that do you feel self-conscious about what just happened?
I love talking about us. Okay, I think that we should do it more. I don't know, Gob. I don't think so. I think of this as this, you know, the Humboldt holding up is kind of its own thing, separate from I don't feel like. And plus, I've only been with the Outpost for, you know, a few years, so most of that time, most of that stuff you guys were talking about, I don't even know what you're talking about. Well, but I do. Okay. But I do know a little bit more now, so thank you so much.
Wonderful.
To Hank.
That's why we're here, is to learn.
Thank you to Hank for joining us, and thank you to Humboldt for supporting the Lost Coast Outpost for 10 long years.
Long ass years. Yeah, next week we'll be back with more hilarity and jovialness and good times here on Humboldt Holding Up. Wear your mask. Go out and enjoy this beautiful, beautiful county.
That's right. This beautiful island. The beautiful island, Humboldt.
Yeah. And that's it. That's enough. Let's go.
Yep. Goodbye. Enough from us.
All right. Yep.